next case for argument.
May it please the court, I'm Jody Schmelzer, Assistant Attorney General for the State of Wisconsin, and I represent the defendant appellants in this action, Gary McCautry, Randall Garrison, and David Hautamaki. I will collectively refer to these defendants as the State. This is an interlocutory appeal taken before this court pursuant to certification under 28 U.S.C. Section 1292B. The State is appealing the district court's decision denying their motion to dismiss this Section 1983 action due to Mr. Posel's failure to properly exhaust his available administrative remedies as is required under the Prison Litigation Reform Act of 1995. In its decision below, the district court effectively rendered toothless the exhaustion requirements of the PLRA. It did so by limiting its analysis to just whether or not the steps of administrative exhaustion were completed, and that without any consideration to whether or not the inmate properly exhausted those administrative grievance procedures. I will be addressing two main points in this argument. First, that it's appropriate for the court to apply O'Sullivan's procedural default rule. And secondly, that because
that doesn't seem to be a contested issue.
It's not a contested issue, Your Honor, and therefore that would have been fairly brief. But the second point is that because Mr. Posel filed untimely appeals in the second stage of the inmate complaint review system, Wisconsin's administrative remedies for inmates, because those appeals were grossly untimely, he had procedurally defaulted on those claims and is barred from bringing them in this 1983 action.
What if he had done it absolutely correctly and lost?
If he would have done it absolutely correctly and lost, mm-hmm. Your Honor, he would have been able to pursue this 1983 action. The exhaustion requirements under the PLRA require that an inmate exhaust available administrative remedies.
There are no administrative remedies available to him either.
At this time, there are no available administrative remedies available. No.
So why hasn't he exhausted them?
He hasn't exhausted them, Your Honor, because adopting O'Sullivan's procedural default rule, we have to look one step further, not to whether or not those steps were completed, but whether or not they were properly completed, whether or not the state was given a fair opportunity to rule on these claims and pass upon them. It's important to adopt the...
Well, they could have waived the time problem, couldn't they?
There is an exception to the timely appeal under the ICRS. That exception is found in Section 310.13, Subpart 3, and it does allow the CCE to waive those time limits if the elapsed time has not made it difficult or impossible to investigate the claim.
And that decision is subjective on the part of the government.
I submit that there are clear standards, that the standard set forth in the exception is clear, whether or not that elapsed time has made it difficult or impossible.
You mean they cannot, as a matter of law, waive that time requirement unless they can affirmatively show that the only reason they're letting it go is it hasn't bothered them a bit?
I'm not sure to what extent the CCE...
they can waive the statute of limitations, can't they?
The statute of limitations under the grievance system?
Under any of the circumstances. Anybody who fails to raise the statute of limitations or makes an intelligent decision to waive it can do so.
That's correct, Your Honor. It's an affirmative defense and it can be waived. However, in this case we're talking...
This is an affirmative defense. This is an affirmative action. Supposing they had not raised the issue of timeliness, would the state have proceeded to adjudicate the administrative beef?
They probably would have attempted to do that. However, Perez tells us that the state can waive the affirmative defense of failure to exhaust.
Right. Supposing during a period of time when he filed this administrative claim, they had not raised the issue of timeliness, could the administrative procedure then go on right along and take care of his problem?
I believe in that situation...
It isn't a jurisdictional issue, is what I'm saying.
Correct. Perez tells us that. And I believe in that situation, the state would have waived the untimeliness of Mr. Pozo's petition. However, in this situation...
Had they done so, had they waived it, and he lost in the administrative procedure, he could still then proceed with the instant case, couldn't he?
I think we get into issues then of whether or not the... decision was based on an independent and adequate state grounds, the independent factor of that analysis. And
my simple question, however, is that if they had waived it and if he lost in the administrative proceeding, he would not be barred from bringing this action.
I don't think under the case law interpreting the procedural default rule, he would have been barred from bringing this action in that situation. Because in that situation, Mr. Pozo probably would have raised the argument that it wasn't based on an independent state procedural rule, that the CCE went ahead and decided the merits of his complaint anyway, that the state's decision wasn't based on independent and adequate state grounds. However, in this situation, there's no dispute that Mr. Pozo did not, that the only reason for the denial of his appeal by the CCE was because he was untimely. It went no further than that. And the egregiousness of Mr. Pozo's failure to comply with this rule, he filed these appeals over a year after receiving...
Well, that wouldn't make much difference, egregious or not. If he blew it, he blew it.
Well, Your Honor, under the exception to filing an untimely appeal, it does. After receiving this initial decision on his complaint, completely thwarts the purposes behind exhaustion, which are to give the state the first opportunity to investigate the matter when the facts are present, when evidence and witnesses...
Well, that would be a state problem, but would that prevent the court exercising jurisdiction under 1983?
I believe it would.
It would become a federal jurisdictional issue.
I believe it would be a procedural bar under interest of federalism and comity between the state's decisions and federal review of those decisions. And I believe the courts, in applying the habeas procedural defect rule, have observed those very underlying purposes for respecting the state procedural rules and its strict adherence to those state procedural rules and deferring to them in not allowing an inmate to fail to properly exhaust those administrative remedies. And the prime example of that, Your Honors, is the Coleman case, where we have an inmate who was convicted of capital murder and sentenced to death. He did not file a timely appeal. His appeal was 3 days late, and the court held that the federal court must observe the state interest of strict adherence to its procedural rules. It was an independent and adequate basis for denying the inmate relief in state court, and therefore it must recognize that and bar him from bringing a federal habeas action. I see that my time is up. Back for a moment.
Thank you, Ms. Schmelzer. Mr. Kiesler.
May I please the court?
We're pleased. Go ahead.
The decision of the district court denying the motion to dismiss should be affirmed. Mr. Pozo exhausted administrative remedies, and he did so properly. And I'll address that more in a moment. First, I'd like to address the question the court asked in this case, particularly, which is whether exhaustion under 1997E can be treated the same as the exhaustion principles in O'Sullivan. And as stated in the brief, we believe that the exhaustion principles in O'Sullivan may be generally applied to the PLRA to the extent that exhaustion requires one full round of appeals, and that one full round of appeals can include appeals that a plaintiff is not entitled to as a matter of right. However, we feel that the one full round only includes the ordinary appellate procedures, and that the ordinary appellate procedures only are applied to administrative remedies. That being said, Turning to the specifics of this case, it's undisputed that Mr. Pozo has exhausted his administrative remedies, and I submit that he did so properly. And I say it's undisputed because...
Well, it's only that. I thought that was the what was in dispute, that he hadn't exhausted it because he didn't do it right.
Well, there's a bit of dispute, not just in this case, but in a lot of cases that address procedural default, in whether procedural default means you haven't exhausted or procedural default means you've exhausted because, as Your Honor pointed out earlier, there are no remedies available to anymore.
But that's O'Sullivan.
Yeah.
O'Sullivan says if you haven't done it right, you haven't exhausted, even if it's too late for you to do it right now.
I can accept that. I think there is only in that...
You know, they reversed us. We had said in that case, it seems to me, pretty much what you're saying now. We thought it was right. Mm-hmm. They thought it was wrong.
Well, I'm prepared to address that anyway with respect to the fact that he has not procedurally defaulted his claim regardless. And I think attention should be paid to the state refers to the timing exception, excuse me, the timing rule, in particular section 310.13, subsection 3, as an exception to subsection 1.
Yeah, but let me tell you what the difficulty I have with your view. Your view seems to suggest that O'Sullivan was itself incorrectly decided because the Supreme Court of Illinois allows anybody to file an untimely request for their discretionary review. And the problem that was seen in O'Sullivan was that the prisoner had never asked the Supreme Court of Illinois to review a particular issue, and the time had now run for doing that. But since the Supreme Court of Illinois allows people to request untimely review, it would seem that on the view you're taking here, O'Sullivan was wrongly decided, because the prisoner still could have requested the Supreme Court of Illinois some years later to entertain his claim.
My reading of O'Sullivan is, in particular, there's language in there that says there's no dispute that the time has now run so that he cannot raise these appeals, thus we find procedural default.
No. There are two questions. There's the time to file a timely request.
Mm-hmm.
That had plainly run in O'Sullivan. It had run here. Then there's the possibility that the court would excuse and accept an untimely filing. The Supreme Court of Illinois does that, actually, with some frequency. And that's what you're relying on here, to say, well, if they could accept an untimely filing, that's treated pretty much the same as if he had made a timely filing. If he filed an untimely filing and they didn't accept it, that should be treated the same as if he filed it timely. But on that rationale, O'Sullivan itself was wrongly decided. You see, that's my problem.
Well, you put me in a difficult situation since they reversed you on that. Maybe it's better for me to agree with you. But... and
yeah, you can express our great wisdom in that case, but the fact is, we were reversed.
Well, and I may have missed the point, you know, Sullivan, regarding the Illinois Supreme Court giving, you know, within discretion, time to file late appeals. The language I'm referring to specifically is that, in referring to the amended federal habeas petition raising three claims that had not been raised to the Illinois Supreme Court of Appeal. It says, there's no dispute that this state court remedy, a petition for leave to appeal to the Illinois Supreme Court, is no longer available to Burkle. The time for filing such a petition is long past. And so that is the language mm-hmm. I cling to, for lack of a better word, in saying that, you know, they're looking specifically at the timing of it and not the discretion to hear a later filed appeal. Going back to the Wisconsin Administrative Code, the subsection 310.13.3 in particular does not make any reference to subsection 1. It doesn't say that subject to subsection 1, an appeal filed late may be heard within the discretion of the CCE. It just says, and admittedly the statute's a little bit confusing even to me, that the CCE may accept for review an appeal filed later than 5 calendar days after receipt of the decision if the elapsed time has not made it difficult or impossible to investigate the complaint. And that's the extent of the statute. It doesn't say, if you're outside of the 10-day window of subsection 1, we'll use our discretion, maybe or maybe not. It just says that late filed complaints, and in this sense, late filed just means after 5 days of the decision, may be heard within discretion. And for that reason, I would submit to you that Mr. Pozo did comply with that timing requirement. He may have been outside of the 10 days, which my reading of the Wisconsin statute is that if you file within 10 days, you're entitled to review as a matter of right.
It's safe to say that 1 year is outside 10 days.
But, I think that's right, too. But it isn't necessarily difficult or impossible to hear his claim. So it isn't necessarily outside of the discretion of the court at that point to hear the late filed claim. Late filed with respect to subsection 1.
If we agree with your sort of rationale and we say that Pozo hasn't defaulted, doesn't that mean that inmates can essentially not bother with appealing to a CCE? Since they can just wait 11 days, file a late appeal, receive a dismissal for untimeliness, and then proceed with their suit?
I think the answer to that question is no. And I would say that because I believe you can default this statute. You can default this Wisconsin administrative procedure. But the problem is, looking at the actual decision by the CCE in this case, he ruled that you're outside of 10 days, so I'm not going to hear the complaint. He did not say you're outside the 10 days and it is difficult or impossible for me to hear your complaint, therefore I have no discretion to hear it and it is out of bounds. In this case, he merely relied on the 10 days and went on about his business.
Well, the statute says they may, doesn't say they have to.
That's correct.
So that it's purely a discretionary decision on the part of the administrative body as to whether they are going to waive or let the late filing go by without comment or not.
Well, I think the...
You think he has to, in order to justify his may, show that the reason I don't do this is because it's going to be tough?
Well, I think it's in the sense of if subsection 3 really was an exception to the general rule, then maybe you could say that by applying the general rule, I don't need to apply the exception, but I think subsection 3 is not...
Doesn't May just give the administrative group the right to accept it or not accept it without reference? It just gives them a cook to hang their coat on, as opposed to a requirement that they have to demonstrate that it would be tough.
I think that may be a fair reading, but the problem as far as invoking procedural default is, in order for a rule to be adequate for procedural default, it must be based on an independent and adequate grounds. And I don't know...
Well, the independent adequate grounds is too late.
Well, I don't know that given subsection 3, which vests discretion in the examiner, can be considered an adequate ground because there's no guideline.
You're back to my point. Is the discretionary grounds given a requirement that he set forth why he is not exercising his discretion in favor of the prisoner? Or does he just say, nope, too late?
I think the largest concern with this is that because of what he has just said, it is out of time and I'm not going to hear it, there is nothing on a record to make us think that it was difficult or impossible. There's nothing that can give
us... It is not subject to judicial review unless the statute says he must do that. And that's what I'm trying to figure out. What you're saying is it should be subject to judicial review and therefore he should enunciate why he's not exercising his discretion. In favor of the petitioner.
When you say it's not subject to judicial review, are you referring to the decision by the CCE?
No, by the administrative group to say, no, I'm not going to hear it. It's, you're too late. Big.
Well, I don't know that whether it's...
What you want to do is make that subject judicial review or requiring it to give the reasons why he didn't.
I think that might be one course of action that prisoners can take if they get sort of an ambiguous decision by the CCE. That maybe they can go and file some other petition, go appeal.
To say it's late, though, is not ambiguous.
Yeah.
Let me, so long as we keep pestering you, you can keep answering.
Thank you.
When they tell you your time is up, then your time is up, but otherwise...
Even when the lights are still on?
Then,
we control the
lights. Right. Let me give you the... We control the horizontal. We control the vertical. let me give you a parallel in federal practice. Somebody has 30 days to appeal from a judgment in the district court, but there's discretion to extend that time to 60 for excusable neglect or good cause shown, something like that. Suppose somebody files a notice of appeal 45 days after the judgment, and it's just summarily dismissed as untimely. Then a question arises whether all available remedies have been exhausted. would one say that they've been exhausted or not? The time could have been extended to 60 on a showing of excusable neglect, but no such neglect was found. And all we observe is that the appeal was, in fact, dismissed as untimely.
I think the difference in that case is there's a required showing by the person filing the appeal. You need to show there's excusable neglect. You need to show there's good cause. I need to affirmatively go and prove to you that it's not my fault I was late. In this case, there's no showing required by Mr. Pozo or anybody else. It almost looks like the burden is on the examiner to demonstrate that it is difficult or impossible to hear this claim now before exercising
discretion. That certainly doesn't say there's any burden on the examiner. It just says he may excuse untimeliness if. It doesn't look like it says he must excuse untimeliness unless. That would, I assume, put some burden on him, but the actual structure doesn't.
But the actual structure certainly doesn't place any burden on the person filing the appeal to give them an opportunity to make their claim of why their claim should be heard. For example, if the burden was on Mr. Pozo in this case to say, if you can show that your claim is not difficult or impossible to hear, we will hear it. And in that case, you could look and say, well, Mr. Pozo, you haven't made that showing. You haven't shown it's difficult or impossible. And to give him the opportunity to overcome that and explain why the discretion should be used to hear this claim. And I think that's really the difference between particularly this Wisconsin statute and all of these statutes where you find procedural fault that have these 30 days or else you lose your claim, or with a showing of good cause, we'll give you another opportunity. That language is absent from here, and I think it's for a reason.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything further, Ms. Schmelzer?
The fact that the exception in 310.13 subpart 3 is discretionary does not, in and of itself, on the face of that code provision, make it an inadequate state procedural rule to find grounds for procedural default under. Although not authoritative, the case of Morales versus Calderon from the Ninth Circuit does an in-depth analysis of these sort of discretionary rules or exceptions and states that
I want to caution you that citing the Ninth Circuit is dangerous at best.
I don't often do it either, Your Honor. However, the reasoning that Morales used was you can't just look at the discretionary nature of the rule. You have to look at whether or not it's applied in an inconsistent or freakish manner. There's no evidence here that the CCE applied that the exception in 310.13.3 in a freakish or inconsistent or infrequent manner. Therefore, there's no basis for this court to find that procedural default should not apply. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. And Mr. Geisler, we thank you particularly and your firm for your willingness to accept the appointment in this case and the assistance you've been both to your client and to us. Thanks very much. The case is taken under advisement.